Dr. Keone Kawe is an internationally recognized researcher specializing in Alzheimer's disease genetics. He earned his bachelor's and master's degrees at BYU, then completed his doctoral study at Washington University in St. Louis in 2007, and a postdoctoral fellowship at the Washington University School of Medicine in 2008. He joined the faculty at BYU in 2009 and is currently associate professor in the Department of Biology and coordinator of the bioinformatics program. Dr. Kawe's research focuses on innovative approaches to characterize the genetic architecture of Alzheimer's disease. His work has been funded by the NIH National Institute on Aging, the Alzheimer's Association, the Charleston Conference on Alzheimer's Disease, and partnerships with other organizations. Dr. Kawe has made important contributions towards discovering more than a dozen new genetic risk factors for Alzheimer's disease. He has more than 100 peer-reviewed publications in respected journals, journals of stature such as the New England Journal of Medicine, Nature, Nature Genetics, Neuron, Neurology, and the Proceedings of the American Academy of Sciences. Dr. Kawe's work has been recognized nationally and internationally as evidenced by his appointment as senior editor for the journal Alzheimer's and Dementia, his recent service as a panelist for the 2015 National Institutes of Health Summit on Alzheimer's Disease Research, and as the scientific lead for the International Alzheimer's Disease DREAM Challenge. In alignment with BYU's unique mission, Dr. Kawe's research efforts are designed to include significant contributions from BYU undergraduates. Since 2009, seven of his students have been first authors on peer-reviewed publications, 24 have been co-authors, and 33 have received BYU ORCA awards. Dr. Kawe and his wife Monica live in Orem with their four children. They enjoy gardening, hiking, fishing, and playing sports together. Would you please join me in giving a warm welcome to our forum speaker, Dr. Keone Kawe.
Thank you for that kind introduction, Dr. Webb. I'm humbled by the assignment to speak today at this university forum. I'm also truly humbled by the number of my friends and colleagues and BYU community that are here today. As I listened to that introduction, I really wanted Dr. Webb to say we or they, because I feel like everything that has happened while I've been here at BYU has been so heavily influenced by my colleagues who are mentors, by the students and staff that work with me, and I'm so grateful for what we've accomplished together. Today I'll use our time together to answer some common questions about Alzheimer's disease and try to help you understand how our research efforts here at BYU are contributing to a cure for this terrible disease. So the first question, one of the most frequent questions that I hear is, why are you studying Alzheimer's disease? My great-grandmother, Hattie Sorrell, suffered from Alzheimer's disease. I knew she wasn't well. I knew that my Auntie JoJo and Uncle David had spent more than 15 years caring for her. However, at the time that I knew her, I was quite young, and I didn't really understand what it meant for her to have Alzheimer's disease. I also didn't understand what it meant to my family, who cared for her on a daily basis. When I began studying Alzheimer's disease as a graduate student, I still didn't understand just how devastating this disease is to those suffering from it, nor did I understand the harrowing physical, emotional, and financial impact that it has on their lives. As I met people suffering from the disease, talked with their families, spent time with physicians that were doing autopsies and looking at Alzheimer's brains, made progress in my own research, the depth and the breadth of the suffering that's caused by this terrible disease became clear. Most of you probably have a loved one or an acquaintance that is dealing with this disease. You know and you understand the emotions that have motivated me to study this disease. For those who are fortunate enough to be unfamiliar with this disease, we can answer this question by the numbers. Alzheimer's disease is the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. It kills more people than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined. 1 in 3 seniors dies with Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia. In 2016 alone, Alzheimer's disease and dementia will cost the United States an estimated $236 billion. For many practical reasons, Alzheimer's disease is something that must be addressed. The perspective I gained as a student, along with the overwhelming numbers that I just showed you, led me to decide that the focus of my professional life would be to solve Alzheimer's disease. I wish we already had a solution. The suffering truly is unimaginable, but I am confident that we will have one in the future. Another frequent set of questions that I receive is, what is dementia? What is Alzheimer's disease? And are they different? In fact, when I was getting my makeup put on for this event, that was the conversation that we had. Dementia is a general term that describes several symptoms, including impairment of memory, communication, ability to focus, reasoning and judgment, and visual perception. Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of dementia. It accounts for up to 80% of the cases where dementia symptoms are observed. Alzheimer's disease is a progressive, degenerative disorder that attacks the brain's nerve cells, or neurons, resulting in loss of memory, thinking and language skills, and behavioral changes. One common method for diagnosis is the clinical dementia rating. This rating is designed, it's a kind of quasi-interview, to use questions and tasks that are carefully crafted to interrogate aspects of cognition and function that are impacted specifically by Alzheimer's disease. So, for example, part of this test would be that the clinician would ask the subject to repeat a simple phrase, perhaps in a name and an address. So let's just try that together. Just repeat after me. Stephen Ka'aipu'upu'u Keaniani, 1365 Humala Street, Kailua, Hawaii. Okay, so we won't really do the test right now. And if we did, it would not be that name and address. That was just a shout out to my younger brother, who's a student in chemical engineering here at BYU that I really love. But in this portion of the exam, the clinician would offer a simple phrase, such as John Brown, 42 Market Street, Chicago. The clinician would then provide a series of questions or tasks to the subject, trying to distract them so that that phrase is no longer in their immediate thoughts. Then they would ask for the phrase to be recalled. Someone with Alzheimer's disease will struggle to recall the phrase, even with hints and prompting. Trained professionals can administer these kinds of tests to give a reliable diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. While these clinical exams do provide a reliable diagnosis, definitive diagnosis is accomplished only upon autopsy. At autopsy, brain sections can be stained to evaluate the presence of two key features, amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. Amyloid plaques are aggregates of several molecules, with a protein fragment called amyloid beta 42 being the key component. They are found in the space between the neurons in the brain. Neurofibrillary tangles occur inside the neurons and are tangles of a protein called tau. Abnormal concentrations of these two features in the brain lead to a diagnosis of definitive Alzheimer's disease. While we are still studying the details of how these features destroy the brain, it is very clear that neurofibrillary tangles are toxic to our neurons and result in the death of those cells, causing the damage and the symptoms that are observed in Alzheimer's disease. These features have been shown to appear in the brain up to 20 years before clinical symptoms are observed. As one considers the clinical manifestation of Alzheimer's disease, another question often arises. Isn't memory loss part of normal aging? The simple answer is no. Memory loss is not a part of normal aging. Occasional senior moments are normal. For example, misplacing the car keys a bit more often than you used to. The Alzheimer's Association has provided a set of warning signs to assist those who have concerns about whether changes in memory are beyond those expected in normal aging. These 10 warning signs can create fear upon first reading, but for each of these, there is a distinct difference between the changes observed in normal aging and those that may be signs of Alzheimer's disease. For example, an age-related change in memory would be sometimes forgetting the names of people that you recently met, or forgetting an appointment but remembering it later. An Alzheimer's disease-related sign of memory loss could be forgetting important and familiar dates or events, or asking for the same information repeatedly, possibly an increasing reliance on family members for things that a person used to handle quite easily on their own. It is also common to worry when sometimes you have trouble finding the right word. This is a typical age-related change. Someone with Alzheimer's disease could struggle to even follow or join conversations. They may stall in the middle of a conversation, having no idea how to continue or repeating themselves. They may struggle not just to find the right word, but may often substitute incorrect names for objects, for example, saying the thing you write with instead of saying pen. Another age-related concern might be that you occasionally require help using a bit of new technology, your iPad or your computer. Someone with Alzheimer's disease would have trouble with something that they knew much better. For example, finding a location that they used to drive to every day could become a struggle, or struggling with other complex tasks, such as balancing a budget that they've been able to perform satisfactorily their entire life. So I hope you understand the contrast between normal aging and the changes that occur and the serious challenges and adjustments to lifestyle that are caused by the beginnings of Alzheimer's disease. Upon receiving a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, common questions include, is Alzheimer's disease fatal and are there treatments? Unfortunately, the simple and direct answer is that there is no cure for Alzheimer's disease. Current treatments slow the worsening of symptoms for 6 to 12 months at best, and only in a subset of individuals. Alzheimer's disease is the only one of the top 10 causes of death in the United States with no prevention, no modifying therapy, and no cure. This is not happy information, but it really helps us emphasize the need, the urgent need, for more research in Alzheimer's disease. Another question, can I do anything to prevent Alzheimer's disease? Research into prevention suggests that good cardiovascular health, physical exercise, intellectual and social activity, and following the Mediterranean diet may support brain health and prevent Alzheimer's disease. For those who know me personally, they understand that I take this advice by fishing with my friends and eating the fish. And I encourage all of you to find a similar passion that allows you to fulfill all of those preventative measures. So there's those are the things that you could do. However, they are not definitive. So you could do all of those things, follow all of those recommendations, and still develop Alzheimer's disease. Similarly, coconut oil, pomegranate, curcumin, and other multivitamins could be beneficial for your health, and you may hear claims about their effectiveness against Alzheimer's disease, but none of these things will cure or prevent Alzheimer's disease. So what causes Alzheimer's disease? This question is the source of several misconceptions. There is no conclusive scientific data suggesting that any of the following factors cause Alzheimer's disease: aluminum, aspartame, flu shots, dental fillings. These factors and many others have been carefully investigated and do not have a detectable impact on Alzheimer's disease risk. In fact, while there are clearly environmental influences on risk, at present there's no definitive evidence of what those factors may be. The known risk factors for Alzheimer's disease are age and DNA, with DNA including both your family history as well as information about specific genetic variants that you carry. Age drastically increases the risk for the disease, but Alzheimer's disease is not exclusively a disease of the elderly. Alzheimer's disease can affect people in their 50s, 40s, and even 30s. In addition, as you consider advances in biomedical technology, healthcare, and health maintenance, they've provided our loved ones with excellent quality of life into their 70s and beyond. Alzheimer's disease threatens to rob our loved ones of those elderly years. This disease matters to all of us at any age. The answers to these questions have painted a rather sobering picture of this disease, and unfortunately, the truth is exactly that. However, thousands of healthcare professionals, caregivers, and scientists are contributing to a cure for this disease. And as I mentioned previously, I'm certain that we will find a solution. Then you might ask, well, what have all these scientists accomplished? There are several drugs that are currently in clinical trials, and they exhibit promise as we start early on. But there's been a common problem identified by many scientists with these clinical trials, and that is that we need earlier diagnosis and even prognosis of this disease. As I mentioned, the pathology can be present 20 years before clinical symptoms, so we have to find a way to know that and address it early on. That prognostic and diagnostic capability can come from genetic information. It can come from clinical tests, like the clinical dementia rating that I kind of introduced to you. And it could also come from biofluids, looking at blood or cerebral spinal fluid or brain imaging. Another challenge is that our knowledge of the basic causes of Alzheimer's disease remains incomplete. More information about the genes and the biological pathways that cause this disease could provide us with new ideas for drug targets, further accelerating our search for a cure to Alzheimer's disease. Another common question that arises from this, especially for someone with a loved one with disease, is what about DNA? If my mom had Alzheimer's disease or my grandmother had Alzheimer's disease, what does that mean for me? And there you go, you've asked the wrong question. And if we didn't have a time limit, we could be here for many hours while I talk to you all about the genetics of Alzheimer's disease. But I hope that I can give you just a little peek into the answers to that question. Our knowledge of the genetic basis of Alzheimer's disease suggests that there are two subtypes. Early onset Alzheimer's disease, characterized by onset before 65 years of age, is often caused by changes in three specific parts of the DNA and accounts for about 1% of all Alzheimer's cases. These changes in DNA are dominant, meaning that if you inherit just one of these genetic variations from a parent, it is sufficient to cause the disease. If you have a parent with this kind of Alzheimer's disease, that means there's a 50-50 chance that you inherited the variant. As we've done research on these particular changes in the DNA, it's become very clear that research has shown that each genetic change influences the production of amyloid beta 42. If you remember, that was the sticky component of the amyloid plaques that are one of the key pathological features of Alzheimer's disease. Most of the current research in Alzheimer's disease therapeutics has been spurred by these genetic discoveries and is focused on modifying amyloid production or clearance. Certainly, as we make progress in understanding other genes and pathways, other therapies could be developed that would target different aspects of this process. The other subtype is called sporadic Alzheimer's disease. This is characterized by later and highly variable age at onset, and accounts for the other 99% of all Alzheimer's cases. It's known that having a first-degree relative with Alzheimer's disease increases your risk by about threefold. In addition, we've discovered several specific genetic variants that impact Alzheimer's disease risk. While significant progress in understanding the genetic basis of this risk has been made, our knowledge remains incomplete. Work that we've done here at BYU estimates that we understand about 30% of the genetic risk for Alzheimer's disease right now. Progress in understanding the other 70% will lead to answers to the important question, why do some people get Alzheimer's disease while others do not? Those answers will be the key to our efforts to finding a cure. The most common approach to studying the genetics of sporadic Alzheimer's disease is a genetic association study. This simple strategy can be used to identify genetic variants that are more frequent in Alzheimer's disease cases than in their cognitively normal counterparts. For this work, the clinical diagnosis of many individuals, along with information about the status of their DNA at sites that are variable between individuals, referred to as genetic variants, is required. Research in my lab is focused on understanding the genetics of Alzheimer's disease with an emphasis on identifying novel therapeutic targets. We do this with two strategies. First, we contribute to massive collaborative efforts that provide big advantages in conducting genetic research. Second, we develop novel approaches to the identification of these variants. As a basic lesson on genetics, is required to understand the research that we're currently working on in the lab. You may have been taught at some point in your life that DNA is the recipe or the blueprint for an organism, and these analogies can be really valuable in beginning to understand genetics. If you consider that the DNA is your recipe book, your family's favorite one that has been passed on for generations, and let's say that you're making your favorite chocolate cake recipe, you don't want to lose or damage the original recipe, so what do? You make a photocopy of that recipe. That copy is the one that does the work. It's out on the counter. It's being spilled on and torn and dropped on the floor and stepped on or who knows what. But it's used to assemble the right ingredients in the right proportions. eventually it gets worn out. And when it does, and you can't read it anymore, you toss it out, you make another copy from the original. When all the ingredients are assembled in the right proportions, you have batter, not cake. Then you use the oven to complete the process of making the cake. The basic process of how genes and environment result in an organism and its traits is similar to this process. DNA, the original recipe, is transcribed into RNA while remaining in a protected location. The RNA, the photocopied recipe, is then used outside of that protected area to assemble each component of a protein in the right order and combination, which would be the batter. Finally, the environment, which could range from the other proteins in the air to the personal relationships you have to the air that you breathe, influences the final result. Both DNA and environment influence every trait of an organism. Ideally, we would study this whole interaction of genes and environment at once for a number of reasons, complexity, financial challenges, various limitations. My work is focused mostly on isolating and identifying the DNA part of this interaction. So when clinical status and genetic information have been collected from a group of cases and controls, researchers can assess the frequency of genetic variants in those two groups. In this graphic, a simple example demonstrates this concept. One genetic marker has been interrogated. Two possible states of that marker exist. Which one would you prefer to carry? As you examine the two groups, the answer is clear. Controls, or non-Alzheimer's disease subjects, have more triangle versions of the gene. That's the one you'd want to carry. It's pretty straightforward. And in fact, the study design can seem so simple that you may be wondering why it takes so much time, money, and expertise to conduct this work. The challenge comes when you scale things up. There are more than 3 billion different locations in your DNA. You would have to be very lucky, winning the Powerball jackpot twice in a row, kind of lucky, to randomly choose the location of a genetic variant that impacts Alzheimer's disease from the entire human genome. That means that we have to look at many, many parts of the DNA to help our odds. In addition, many thousands of cases and controls, each carefully assessed by qualified professionals, must be identified and DNA collected and isolated from each subject. Early work in Alzheimer's disease was hindered by limitations of both technology for interrogating genetic markers and the lack of large numbers of cases and controls. Rapid advances in genotyping technology now make it possible for millions of genetic markers to be interrogated for just hundreds of dollars per subject. The number of markers has been successfully scaled up. The need for more study subjects has not been met as easily. Early on in Alzheimer's disease research, and for far too many years, individual research groups were analyzing dozens of genetic markers in hundreds of samples. The studies just weren't big enough, and this work produced basically no meaningful scientific progress over the course of more than two decades. Eventually, some research groups and international funding agencies recognized the need for larger numbers of study subjects. Their efforts have led to the development of massive collaborations. The first of these collaborations to successfully identify new genetic risk factors for Alzheimer's disease was led by Dr. Julie Williams from the University of Cardiff. Under her leadership, several research groups around the world, including ours at BYU, began a large collaborative effort in 2006. Each lab worked to share samples, genetic data, and expertise. For several years, we worked together to ensure that our methods for clinical diagnosis and collection of genetic data were harmonized. The size and complexity of the data set created new challenges. These challenges required many months of careful data processing and data analysis. Our lab assisted in every aspect of these efforts, and we've been grateful for the Fulton Supercomputing Lab, a valuable resource here at BYU, which has made it possible for us to effectively process and analyze data sets with more than a million genetic markers in each of tens of thousands of samples. Our work, published in 2009, reported the discovery of the first new genetic risk factors for Alzheimer's disease since 1993. This success spurred more collaboration. It began to change the tide of research in Alzheimer's disease. In 2011, the International Genomics of Alzheimer's Project was established. This collaboration has united nearly every Alzheimer's disease researcher in the United States and Europe. The first study conducted by this larger collaboration used over 12 million genetic variants in nearly 75,000 subjects and reported 11 new genetic risk factors for Alzheimer's disease in 2013. These variants have clearly implicated the immune system and inflammatory response as key parts of Alzheimer's disease risk, adding new therapeutic ideas and targets to the amyloid information that we had previously. It's also made it possible, this collaboration has made it possible for Alzheimer's disease research to make progress in ways that were impossible to imagine just a few years ago. BYU faculty and undergraduates have been and continue to be involved in these consortiums in meaningful ways. As one example, Kevin Beamy, who graduated from BYU in bioinformatics in 2015, did substantial work on merging dozens of data sets from the Alzheimer's Disease Genetics Consortium. His work has contributed to nearly a dozen publications to date and continues to provide a foundation for future Alzheimer's disease research efforts. While bigger is better remains true in this research, and more markers and more samples will likely lead to more genes, there remains a great need for alternative study designs to move Alzheimer's disease research forward. This can be very challenging, as many funding agencies prefer to fund very low-risk research that often has the potential for only small changes in our knowledge. A few years ago, I met John and Anna Marie McMillian. They were dealing with Alzheimer's disease in their family. And as I was introduced to them and got to know them, I did the best I could to help them understand the disease and the research progress that was being made and the options and opportunities they had. And as I had these discussions, it was clear that John and Anna Marie were not willing to settle for the standard approach to research. My relationship with them provided me with motivation, mentoring, and resources to try projects that have a much higher probability for failure, but also have great potential for meaningful progress towards solving Alzheimer's disease. The first project that I developed while working with John draws on vast resources that are unique to Utah and have deep ties to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We began this project by examining data from the Cache County Study on Memory and Aging. This is a longitudinal study that enrolled more than 90% of all individuals over age 65 living in Cache County, Utah in 1994, run by Utah State University. Among the over 5,000 participants in this study, there are a handful of individuals who carry significant genetic risk for Alzheimer's disease and have reached an age of greater than 75 years but remain cognitively normal. They have, they've beaten the odds. These exceptional individuals exhibit resilience to Alzheimer's disease, and they are the primary focus of our research. Next, we used the Utah Population Database to find pedigrees that included these Alzheimer's disease resilient individuals. This database is a combination of the state of Utah's medical records and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints' full genealogy for the original founders of the state of Utah. It includes more than 12 million individuals and spans more than 10 generations. Using this resource, along with the Cache County study, we identified several pedigrees that include rare Alzheimer's disease resilient individuals and their relatives who died of Alzheimer's disease. We then used whole genome sequence, which is all 3 billion parts of the DNA interrogated for each of the resilient samples, to test a simple scientific premise. Within each pedigree, these Alzheimer's disease resilient people share DNA with each other that they do not share with their relatives who died of Alzheimer's disease. Our findings have been very exciting. A genetic variant that, when possessed, cuts the risk of Alzheimer's disease in half, even in individuals with elevated risk due to other genetic factors. We are currently working to develop compounds that will impact this gene's expression and its protein function, which we believe present a promising preventative therapy for Alzheimer's disease. We have many ongoing projects and continue to work to contribute to the large collaborations as well as some of our own unique and what we believe to be creative and good ideas. And this kind of relates to something important that struck me from President Uchtdorf's conference talk in October of 2008, where he shared his friend Hanno Luschin's wise words regarding moving a piano. Many of you are familiar with this. He said, "Stand close together and lift where you stand." I believe that these words can be applied in many aspects of our lives. Our work at BYU embodies this principle by contributing in meaningful ways to the largest projects in Alzheimer's disease research. In this way, we stand close together with our research community. In addition, we've carefully assessed our resources and developed additional ways to contribute to solving this disease that are uniquely ours. We lift where we stand. I'm certain that every member of the BYU community can look at their current role in their family, their ward, their schooling, their employment, and find ways to uniquely contribute. This leads to the next question. So what can I do about Alzheimer's disease? There are many ways to be part of solving Alzheimer's disease. You can become an advocate, work with the Alzheimer's Association or other organizations to ensure that government agencies understand the implications of this disease and commit appropriate resources to research, to care, to supporting caregivers, and any other disease-related needs. You can participate in caregiver and patient support groups. These groups can provide incredible strength to those who deal with the difficulties of this disease on a daily basis. You can also participate in ongoing research efforts. Clinical trials, often for those with very early stage Alzheimer's disease, are ongoing. Participation in those trials directly contributes to some of the most mature efforts to treat Alzheimer's disease. Finally, you can find the foundation, research institution, or individual scientist that fits your interests and donate them to them directly to ensure that they are able to pursue their research efforts in the most meaningful and efficient ways. In closing, I want to share a short story and one more question that I've been asked during my scientific career. A few years ago, I was invited to a conference for promising young scientists in Alzheimer's disease research, probably more years ago than I'd care to admit at this point. It was a competition. We each submitted our best grant ideas. Then we all got together and in the course of the conference evaluated each other's proposals and ranked them. Three winners, as judged by the scientific board of the conference, would each take home $50,000 grants to carry out their proposals. The meeting organizers and participants got to know each other very well after 2 days of meetings and discussions. At the closing dinner, I was seated with several participants and one of the senior members of the scientific advisory board who had participated in the meeting as one of the judges for the final awards. After some brief pleasantries were exchanged, the board member looked at me and said, "Brigham Young University, huh?" "Yes," I replied. "So you believe that stuff," he said. A bit surprised, I stated, "Yes, I do." He looked me in the eyes and said, "But you seem so smart. How do you believe that stuff?" I paused, thinking for a moment, and replied, "Yes, thanks. I've had several experiences in my life that make me a person of faith and a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints." Just as I completed that sentence, the meeting organizer tapped his glass with his knife and began announcing the winners of the contest, and our conversation ended. I want to share with you my testimony that the gospel of Jesus Christ brings true happiness to individuals and families. I've had many experiences that have strengthened my testimony of Christ's teachings, of his church, and the divine nature of each one of his children. I pray that whether we are considering Alzheimer's disease or any other condition or challenge of the human condition, that we will stand close together and lift where we stand. To me, that means leveraging every one of our talents and the circumstances that our Heavenly Father has blessed us with to serve others and to do good continually. I testify that as we strive to do this, we will find a greater measure of peace and joy in our lives, answer the prayers of those around us, and bless those who are in greatest need. I share this with you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.